20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Tuesday, March 29th, 2022. Welcome, everybody. This is the season finale, if you will, of the Pack-A-Day Podcast between the three of us here. I liken it to like a band farewell tour. We're taking our farewell tour today, but you know full well that we're going to be back when one of us is broke and needs more money or something of that sort. But a little transition here during draft season as we'll be doing some different stuff. And by we, I basically mean me. But I am here tonight. I'm your host. I'm Jacob Westendorf. I am joined, as always, by Jacob Morley, who I feel like I spend most of my weeks with. Jake, how are we hanging?
Good, man. Yeah, we see each other a lot these days.
That is correct. And somebody who I see less of, but, you know, that's okay, because it's always special when he's around. That is Ross Uglem. Ross, I got to know, the biggest game in the history of the Duke-North Carolina rivalry will be this weekend. How are we feeling about that?
I mean, all the pressure's on Duke. Truly. You know,
he's right.
If think about that as a Duke player right now. Like, what is Coach K's legacy if we lose this game after losing in Durham like that? Carolina's an 8 seed. I mean, look, it's going to suck if K wins, and especially if they win the whole thing.
If
North Carolina finds a way to win that game, you're not going to tell me nothing. Ever. I mean, ever.
And if they lose?
If they lose, I can still make fun of him telling everybody to be quiet after getting blown out at home in front of 90X players.
I think my favorite Coach K moment from this season is the video. Quiet. The video that they tweeted.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Was the video that they made where he says, "We don't hang anything other than championship banners at Duke." And then it cuts right away to a freaking
Coach banner K banner.
Of him. Which is like, it's like, I think you said it, Roz. Like, is there anybody less self-aware than this freaking guy? Maybe, who knows? He's one of the best ever, and I understand all that, but God, he's annoying, and they're going to win another title, and it's going to be even more annoying because they're winning the title. I said that in, like, November. There's nothing that makes more sense to me than Duke winning a title in Cade's final season. But that's not why you guys are here. I've talked college basketball literally every day since I've been on these videos. We're here to talk football. The NFL annual meetings are taking place right now. So Andy Reid's Hawaiian shirt has made its debut in all of its glory. Of course, Matt LaFleur then, I don't remember the name of the brand, but somebody said he was really brand loyal to whatever that was.
That was Matthew. It's a golf brand.
There you go. That's why. I mean, I barely know that Nike is a thing. So there's my level of brand awareness for everybody. But then you've got the general managers, and Brian Gutekunst did speak today to some of the reporters, and he had a 20-minute session with some of the beat guys. And some things that came through there, obviously a lot of focus on the Davante Adams transaction. Somebody asked him, you know, why didn't you, you know, take the same stance with him that you did with Aaron Rodgers? We're like, we're not trading you. Try and see what happens. Gutekunst basically said they didn't want a $20 million cap bomb hanging over their roster to the point where they would have had to let guys like Rasul Douglas and people of that nature go. So they thought this was in the best interest of the team. Said he's going to be able to potentially soften that blow with 4 picks in the top 60, which might be a smokescreen for, you know, or a tell, some foreshadowing for picking a receiver somewhat early in this year's draft. But we've talked a lot about Davante Adams. We've talked a lot about receivers over the last couple of weeks. One of the other things they talked about, which we thought was interesting, was the re-signing of Rasul Douglas. So now everybody knows it's Rasul Douglas, Eric Stokes, and Jaire Alexander. And that's a group of corners that we never really got to see last year. Alexander played in the wild card round, didn't play a lot of snaps. Douglas and Stokes started together, so they never really had to answer the question of, if all three of those guys are healthy, who plays the slot? Now, Gutekunst said today that he thought that all three of those guys could play the slot. Ross, what is your take on Gutekunst saying he thought all three of those guys could play the slot corner position?
I think it's a little wishful thinking. You know, Jake said Jake Morley. God, I hate that you're both named Jake. You know, Jake mentioned, like, in the pre-show how Eric Stokes' change of direction was better than he anticipated. And I think, you know, the top of the route is really where people were posting clips after they took him of where he might struggle, things from Georgia, like where people were concerned. And I think if you have COD questions, like you definitely don't want the guy you're guarding to have a two-way go. And what I mean by that is, you know, obviously slot receiver, he's got room to the inside to make a break, and he's got room to the outside to make a break, certainly more than somebody who's lining up on the numbers or even outside that. So the two-way go is, I think, the worrisome thing for Stokes, and certainly for Sewell. I mean, Sewell, that's what he doesn't do well, is the short area quickness, the agility, stuff like that. You want him on the outside playing a long zone or sitting in a cover two. You want him playing in the ball. You really want Sewell moving a straight line, kind of back and forth, jumping routes, running, and he can run, and running with, you know, receivers going long in a cover four or something like that, a cover three situation, although the Packers don't play a bunch of, you know, very much single high anymore. So I don't agree, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I think, you know, your better slot options on the roster that aren't Sewell or Stokes is definitely Jair, because there's nothing. And that's what Goody said, is that there's nothing that Ja can't do. So Jair, Darnell Savage played some nickel and some dime at Maryland. I think he's a very reasonable slot option. And, you know, Shamar John Charles, I think, is a guy that, you know, doesn't have a ton of long speed, but showed the ability to move in the short area a little bit at Appalachian State. So those are, I think, kind of more your inside options now that, you know, Kevin King is in the wind and Chandon Sullivan plays for the Minnesota Vikings.
Which, surprise, surprise, another former Green Bay Packer going to play for the Minnesota Vikings. No, it's death taxes and Packers going to play for the Vikings thing. Jake, he mentioned Darnell Savage potentially moving down. That's a popular thought process, but I know, like, when that draft came out, that's something you and I were high on, and we had kind of liked him in that sort of role that we're talking about here. So talk to me about Darnell Savage in that star slot type position, and just what he could bring to the table, and, you know, what the Packers then would in turn need to do to replace him in his current role.
Well, I think there is, you know, there's a little bit of a split on, you know, can Darnell Savage, you know, kind of drop down into the slot and be able to handle some of those responsibilities. And I think, you know, it's been a mixed bag in the NFL since he's been in the NFL, when you kind of look at him in man coverage. But go back to the tape at Maryland. That's where he played. Like, he was drafted as a safety, but he played. He was basically a nickel at Maryland. And one thing that he does really well is he makes explosive plays from the slot, or he did, you know, when he was in college. And I think that's kind of what you're trying to get at when you have a guy like
him. He does in the NFL too, Jake. Like, not to cut you off, but, like, when he's done stuff like that, like the latter half of the 2020 season, I can just think of, you know, doing some stuff like he did against the Tennessee Titans, not quite a slot defender, but an overhang type defender, mm-hmm. or a third and one run stop against Chicago in the season finale that you're like, there are things that they were asking him to do more of at the end of the 2020 season. So we've seen it in the NFL.
Yeah.
So here's some nerd stats for you guys. I've got Pro Football Focus pulled up here for PFF College. So in 2018, Darnell Savage had 242 snaps as a box safety, 332 snaps as a slot corner, and just 89 snaps as a free safety. That mm-hmm. was at Maryland his last year. The year before that, 167 snaps as a box safety, 337 snaps as a slot corner, but 351 snaps as a free safety. So it was really his junior year where he did a ton of work from free safety position. As he got older, they really moved him towards the line of scrimmage to create more mm-hmm. havoc. And that's where, like I said, you see the heavy, heavy snap counts as either an overhang defender or as a true slot guy. Very, very sparingly used as a safety, as a senior.
Well, and that's what's so interesting about him too, and interesting with the way that the Packers strategy with drafting defensive backs is sometimes, because they took a guy and kind of put him in a position that he wasn't necessarily, you're not like bad at, but he just was, that's not where he excelled. He was like similar with Josh Jackson when they drafted him and tried to play him in the slot. That was a head scratcher. It's like, well, why are we doing this? And it and a little bit is the same with Darnell, because when you've seen him make his plays And when you have, and when we have seen him be the most successful, it is when he's closer to the line of scrimmage. And the pushback that you'll get on Savage is, well, he will get beat. He'll get beat sometimes in coverage. But the the Packers run a cover two, right? We're talking about this. So he's not really going to be just covering a guy one-on-one. And two, it's not just about covering in the slot, right? Like, that is obviously a big portion. But when you play him in the slot, I mean, look at all the stuff that Charles Woodson was able to do once he moved to the slot. And I am not comparing Darnell Savage to Charles Woodson, but he could be more impactful than anyone they've had in that position the last few years, in the run game, as a blitzer with his ball skills in that area. Him in that role to me is exciting. Yes, he may give up some plays in the slot, but I think he's going to more than make his fair share of plays in the slot as well. And the thing that scares me about Darnell Savage is you see the talent. It is so abundantly clear that he is an extremely talented kid. And the way the Packers have kind of gone about developing their defensive backs in the past, we've seen guys like Micah Hyde go to another team, play in a different spot, become an all-pro. We've seen Casey Hayward leave Green Bay, really just stay healthy is what he did, but still become an all-pro. And if Savage is not back with the Packers, my fear would be, is another team going to play him in a spot that is more advantageous to him? And then are we going to have to sit back as Packers fans and go, shoot, why didn't they do that, you know, here in Green Bay? And so that, I think, is a really great option. What I feel is a great option. I would love to see Darnell Savage in the slot and in that star position. I think, like Ross already talked about, I would be curious to see Stokes play in the slot. I think that may not be the best usage of his ability because he does have that easy speed that you love to have on the outside. But, man, like Ross said, like the one really big thing that you had concerns with him coming out of Georgia was like, man, this guy really doesn't change directions that well. He doesn't flip his hips and run that well. I thought he did a great job with that last year as a rookie. Like, I was very pleasantly surprised with that. And, you know, I think if you would ask Rasul to play in that spot, it would 100% be Goody leaning on the fact that they do run heavy cover two, and he is an instinctive guy, a long instinctive guy. Like, maybe he can kind of make his hay doing that. Not something I would want to do. But all of us are going to agree, the GM agrees, Jair is the best slot option that they currently have on the team. There's been like a weird thing brought up a lot, like about his shoulder, right? Like, some people still think his shoulder is not healthy. And fellas, if we get into training camp and Jair's shoulder is still bugging him, like, sound the alarm. That's not good. You know, like, and let me just state, I don't think that's real. I think his shoulder's fine right now. I think he's 100% healthy. I would have no issue playing him in the slot, wondering if his shoulder is going to hold up or not. If it still is hurt, that's not good. But Jair, I think, is, yeah, their best slot option. And then there's obviously guys in this year's draft class that we could probably talk about that would be able to come in and kind of fill that role as well.
With spring break approaching, the sun is coming out, everyone is looking for a partner to impress. There are a lot of things your partner could like. Some prefer tall guys, some prefer big butts. But no one prefers their men with smelly, unkempt nuts. That's why our friends at Manscaped developed their improved Lawnmower 4.0 to keep the weeds out of your crotch garden. Before you head out on your spring trip, make sure you're groomed from ball to tip. Join the Manscaped movement by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code PACKADAY. The Performance Package 4.0 includes the Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer, it will change the way you approach your entire grooming routine. The fourth generation trimmer features advanced skin-safe technology to reduce grooming accidents. You don't want any ingrown hairs or snags around the boys before beach season. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, an on-off travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED light on and off. This trimmer is waterproof. You can trim in the shower, not have to worry about any of the embarrassing cleanup afterwards. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner, the perfect combo to keep the beach balls dry and smelling good for even the most intense spring break dance parties. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker. Get rid of those pesky nose and ear hair. Get ready to smell those flowers bloom in the spring. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof. It uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary blade dual system. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology and helps prevent all of those nicks and tugs around those sensitive nose area. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. Manscaped for when you want to be caught with your pants around your ankles.
So there's two things I learned in there. Number one is that Darnell Savage might be playing out of position. And number two is that he's the next Charles Woodson. I'm pretty sure Jake Morley said that. So go ahead and quote tweet those for your next thing. So you talked about replacing him in his new role. There are some guys. One guy that some interesting news came about today, and it's a guy that I mean, I've watched him play, but I haven't put a ton of thought into just because I assumed Kyle Hamilton was going to be a top five, top 10 kind of pick. And Matt Miller was reporting today that he ran slower at his pro day and in the 4.7s than he did at the combine.
Low four sevens.
Than a 4.59, which is what he ran at the combine. So this is like the ultimate, maybe not the ultimate, but one of the bigger tests of like tape versus testing, because Hamilton prior to testing, there were people calling him the best player in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Like over Aiden Hutchinson, over, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau, Ross Uglum's raising his hand. So he was one of them. So Ross, let me kick to you here then. What does this change, if anything, as far as Kyle Hamilton? And does, I mean, I don't want to have you predict, can he fall to 22, but like how far could this fall be?
So for me, it was pretty marginal. It moved him from 1 to 5. You know, not a huge deal. But ultimately, you know, for me, the 4.59 wasn't disqualifying. People start calling that a fast track. Like, okay. And ultimately, you know, it just takes that Nick Collins thing out of his tool set. And look, his tool set is still, like, I think he's a top five player overall. If he were taken by the Packers at 22, there would be no pants. So I'm still very much a Kyle Hamilton fan. It's just that one thing, and he's done it a ton on film against college players and college quarterbacks with college arm strength and whatever. But, like, just that it's so valuable. And then again, like I said, Packers don't play a ton of single high. It is so valuable, especially against teams that like to spread you out, to be able to engage that extra defender around the line of scrimmage instead of really having that 4 high look. You have a 3 high look with 8 kind of around instead of a 4 high look with 7 kind of around. It's just a numbers game. And the ability to have that one guy really playing center field like an Earl Thomas, like what we all thought, or what I certainly thought Malik Hooker was going to be and just has not been. Having that player is so changing to your defense. It allows you to do so many things. And that's just like the one thing that I think got taken away from Kyle Hamilton at the pro level, if he really is a 4.7 guy, because no matter how good your vision is, no matter how good your instincts are, sometimes you just got to tuck tail and bust ass and not get beat for a 70-yard touchdown. And that is concerning to me. I still think he's a great player. I think he's got Pro Bowls in his future as a top five pick. I'm not throwing even all pro out of the question. But he's not Derwin James then. You know what I mean? I mean, and it's not that Derwin plays center field, because he doesn't. But Derwin, it was like you saw all this stuff, plus he's an alien. And mm-hmm. and Hamilton is just, instead of being an alien, is just a very good athlete. Because, you know, we talk about relative athletic score. I want people to understand, Hamilton is not a bad athlete just because he didn't run awesome. This guy has a 9.28 RAS. He is more athletic than 92% of the safeties in front of him, and it's because he ran, or he has a 38-inch vertical and a 10-foot 11-inch broad. This is a very explosive athlete. He's also a reasonably agile athlete with a sub 7-3 cone. He's not a blazer. And that's fine. You, like I said, most good players have one elite athletic trait, and he does. His enormous size and his explosive ability.
Yeah, I think
he'll have that, and then we'll change. Go ahead. But that, with, all I had well, to I just, that wasn't gonna change.
Is I think the concern though is like safety is probably kind of a devalued position to an extent, and here you have this kid that you thought was that size, but also the entire package. And now, so the question is, well, he is that size. We love his tape, but he isn't the entire package. So then where does that leave you with? But also it is the tape versus the track, because I guarantee you that every scouting report that you will read about Kyle Hamilton will mention his range, because that shows up in throws on tape. I mean, the dude is playing sideline to sideline. And I think some of that is you can get away with being a 4-6 athlete if like your route identification is that good. And I believe that it is. If you are already 1.5 steps into where the route concept is leading you and you're correct, like he is often, it doesn't matter. Ed Reed was a mid-4.5s guy. One of the best ball hawking safeties we've ever seen.
The best safety in the history of the sport.
Marcus Williams just got paid. 4.57 40 is what he ran. So like you can get away with it, but I do understand why teams might be like, well, I don't want to take him at 4. You know, if he's not going to be that 4.4 guy at that size, I don't want to take him at 4. I kind of see where teams might be like, well, we're not comfortable taking him in the top 10. Because he's a safety. And if that's the case, I don't get why anyone would want to take him before 21, you know, and let him fall to 22.
Oh, that feels like an ulterior motive in that particular case. So there's man, that.
I'd be running through the streets if Kyle, I mean, and what a shocker that would be. But fellas, does it not happen every year? Remember Miles Jack? No way. He's there for the Packers. And then they passed on him. You know, and they took and they were correct. They took Kenny Clark over him, and they were right.
And I'll say this, like, about the Miles Jack thing, that what just the differentiation is simply they do. I don't think enough people understand that both Amos and Savage aren't under contract after this season. But as far as just the way people look at the depth chart right now, they see two decent starters and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. Miles Jack, they didn't have a Mike linebacker. They didn't have one. So people were freaking out because they're like, this guy is a top 6 talent at our worst position and we can take him. And then they didn't, and people lost their minds.
And Kenny's really good. So God bless Kenny Clark and Ted Thompson.
They took 13-year-old Kenny Clark instead.
And that was like, I think that was Ted's final gift to the Packers, if memory serves. I can't remember if he had another good first rounder after that. But so the Hamilton thing is interesting. And Ross, you talked about it. They see two decent starters. Well, the Packers play three safeties a lot. And it's kind of the same thing that I've talked about with Edge, is like they see two decent starters, but it's like, their first round pick at 22 very easily could be a pass rusher for the same reasons we're talking about with them taking a safety, because they play three safeties. Well, you need 3 or 4 good pass rushers at a time as well. So I'm going to be interested to see how that plays out for Hamilton specifically. Right now, if I was betting, I would be betting that he gets picked after 10, but who knows? There's a lot that can happen between now and the draft is actually 1 month from as we're recording right now. So, you know, 30-ish days from now. Away from the draft. Let's go to our final segment. We're talking about some real interesting stuff tonight, guys. The biggest nugget that Jake Morley took away from Brian Gutekunst's press conference today was the punter. And less so about the punting, but the holding. And Gutekunst essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, and Morley, you can give me a better like view of what he said, but essentially said, Corey Bohorquez is not the punter in Green Bay anymore because he was a crappy holder, and that's kind of what they're attributing a decent amount of Mason Crosby's struggles to from a season ago. So what was your take on that, Jake?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't deny it. You know, I don't know exactly what he said, but someone brought up the holding, and he said that, you know, quote-unquote, something like, that has something to do with it, you know. And I remember when Bojo was brought in, and that was the big knock on him. Even you ask any Buffalo fan, like, he was a terrible holder. And a lot of times people love to point out the special teams blowing the game against San Francisco, and they're right. But they fail to mention that if Bojo, I can't even say his last name, and I won't learn how. But if Bojo could have just gotten the hold down for Mason Crosby, and he could have made that kick instead of muffing it, you know, or sitting on it, whatever he did. And mind you, after the big Aaron Jones completion, didn't get any points out of that because of a muffed snap punt hold. That's why he's not a Packer. And I think it has more to do with that as well, because I think you go back to why was Mason struggling this season. That's probably why. And Goody brought up the fact that O'Donnell is a really good holder. Like, he brought that up. Like, hey, we like the way this guy kicks. He's a great directional kicker. He's used to kicking in this weather. Oh, and by the way, he's an excellent holder.
Yeah, and that's got something to do with it, I'm sure. And here's the other thing just to point out. Packer fans over the years have become enamored with punters that have turned out to, like, they almost like turned a blind eye to him struggling. Now, J.K. Scott was the weapon for so long, and he never really was.
Save that was that one punt in Chicago, the game they won 10-3. And he got a free pass for a long time after that.
And Bojo was basically not J.K. Scott earlier in the season, and to the point where, like, his stretch once the weather turned cold, he was not good either.
Yeah.
And I think that had something to do with it, too.
His stretch before that, though, was historically good in Green Bay. Like, he was –
yeah,
bombing balls.
Yep.
But dude, when the weather cold in Green Bay, you got to be a certain type of dude to still be able to kick that thing.
And that's the thing too, because I've heard people. I think like O'Donnell is basically like league average or 20th, like slightly below league average. But he's consistent and he kicks it the same way when it gets cold. And that's honestly, I think the Packers are kind of like, if you can just guarantee us that this guy will be the 18th best punter in the league and that 13 teams will have worse guys, and it's fine if we don't have the best one, like, that, whatever. But if you can just guarantee me that this guy doesn't kick it 28 goddamn yards in a very big spot in the cold weather, we'll take it. And that's, I think, where they're at. And that's what I talked about with the Bisaccia hire the first place. Everybody's like, well, he's average. Like, all his teams rank between 13th and 18th in,
and this is how we should be responding to that.
Exactly.
Bring the average.
I mean, they're the super, that they are the world champions if their special teams was the 14th best unit in the league last year. The world champions, 14 time world champions, not 13, 14 time, if Rich Bisaccia was on staff last year and delivered them the one above or one below league average special teams unit.
Here's the hot take. If the Packers have, it's Pat O'Donnell, right?
Yeah.
If the Packers have Pat O'Donnell on the roster against San Francisco instead of Davante Adams,
oh,
they're Super Bowl champions.
No, no.
Yep. Yep. No.
What?
No.
Yep.
Shut up.
Because shut if up. Pat, if they can get the kick down, Devontae didn't really do much in that game.
What about Devontae had 10 Devontae catches?
Get him there.
Yeah, he had 10 catches.
I just said that game. I didn't say the season. I said that game.
He had 10 catches for 100 yards in a game, Jake.
Did he?
Just a shade under both. But
I don't remember that.
Are you on drugs?
I blocked that game out, guys.
Well, then don't bring me. If you block the game out, don't bring me takes.
And it's also a punter. Like, who cares? Nope. It's a punter.
I'm going to bring you takes. That's what I do. That's
serving takes for us. 90 yards. 9 catches.
All right, so Jake Morley's been fired for saying and a punter Jake was more important.
Westendorf's a liar. He said 10 catches for 100 yards. If he would have had 10 catches for 100 yards, they'd probably win that game.
Well, how many catches did he have?
9 for 90.
Oh, okay. So, excuse me. One more catch for 10 more yards.
Could have been the difference. Could have been the difference, fellas.
I sincerely doubt that, but that's beside the point. No, they do not win if they have Pat O'Donnell instead of, if they don't have Davante Adams. And this is a completely separate discussion, because I know there's a faction of Packers fans that basically think the offense could go in next year as is. without Devontae, and everything's going to be fine because this magical system that just makes people and players better, that's a pile of crap. You still need players to play well. I'm telling you, Jake, you're shaking your head at me. That is how Chip Kelly partially
Lazard, baby. Kelly, Lazard, is, 120 catches, 1,800 yards. Let's do
no
it.
No chance in hell. That is partially how Chip Kelly got fired in Philadelphia, because he got rid of all the good players and said, my scheme is better than yours and we'll win no matter who that is. Doesn't work that way. You need the players. You need the players. We're out of time. I've had enough of Jake Morley's crappy takes about punters, so I'm quitting. I will be on a different show, hosting with different people. I am hosting Wednesday shows now with Owen Reese and Russell Brown. Excited to reunite with those guys. You guys will have to deal with Morley and Uglum on their own for a couple of weeks. Once the draft is over and there's a lot less to talk about, we will be back together talking through that. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jacob Westorf. I will be here one more time tomorrow on the video with Paul Bredel, talking some whatever it is we decide to talk about between now and then. You can find Ross over here, and he is at Ross Uglum. You can find him over at Packer Report, the publisher. Maybe I'll be able to get him to talk into one of them sweet little pullovers or something for me, since he said that, you know, there's only one of one, but I don't know if I buy that or just not yet. And then Jake Morley, of course, you can catch him with me on the Gold Zone every Wednesday over at Game On Wisconsin. He'll be hosting with Ross here on the Mondays between now and then. And go ahead and get yourself the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide and the Green Bay Draft Guide. I think $25 combined dollars for the two of them. So all three of us are combined with one of those in one way, shape, or form. So check those out. Get those going. Until next time, the Packers, it'll be April the next time you listen to one of us talk on one of these shows. So that'll be fun. April's draft month, and it's time to kind of get rolling on that. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you again next time around, and go Pack, go.